Blog Talk Radio.
Tap tap, is this thing on? If you've been on hold, thanks for your patience. We had to wait for that darn Blog Talk window, but where were we? It's Sunday, so I am not Greg Parks. I am Tom Stoup, at Tom Stoup on Twitter, because this is a retribution-style takeover of Wrestling Night in America. WWE's NXT TakeOver 31 just ended, and we are here on PW Torch from the Wednesday Daily Cast PWT Talks NXT to analyze all the happenings. We will take emails at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and we are especially looking forward to the calls that we know are waiting at 515-605-9345. That is the number to call in live and share your thoughts on the show. 515-605-9345. And running that switchboard tonight is our pal, Nate Lindberg. Nathanielson, tell us what you got. And if you could, please start us off with a quick thumbs up, thumbs down on the show overall. Was this TakeOver 30 wonderful, or was it as fun as catching COVID from a cold stone sample spoon?
Ooh, well, not at all. I would say it was pretty good. Thumbs up all around for me. I got a couple nitpicks here and there, but overall, I really enjoyed it. I don't think it was worthy of the take under that we were calling it, but I don't think it was also there's a couple things that weren't as over the top as I thought they were going to be, but we'll get there. I'm Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I write the NXT hits and misses. I wrote one for tonight, and you guys should see that head up on pwtorch.com the next couple days.
All right, and our pal Kelly Wells is covering the post-takeover Triple H conference call. He will let us know if anything pertinent on that call comes up, if/when he is able. And myself, for the thumbs up, thumbs down, I am going with a thumbs down. There was a lot about this show that I was unable to look past. I will just start off by saying that it was very apparent. We were able to see it. We talked about it on our daily cast, you know, for the past month or so, that this was just thrown together. They clearly had not planned on having this takeover. And I think that showed in the results. They didn't even give us like a token title change just to justify the event, which we could also criticize because it was already transparent enough that this was booked at the last minute. But there was a lot that I'll rant about in just a moment. But I do want to get to, because I know there are some regular Sunday listeners who look for the results at the top of the show. So here's a quick rundown for you. To open the show, we had Damian Priest pinning Johnny Gargano in 1845 to retain the North American Championship. Then Kushida submitted Velveteen Dream in 1301, and then he continued to stretch him after the bell. Santos Escobar was in the middle of the show pinning Shane Strickland. I still am not, I'm just going to say Shane Strickland. In 1518 to retain the Cruiserweight Championship, after the interference by Legado del Fantasma, and on Swerve's behalf, Ashanti the Adonis, who only just recently was reframed on TV, the former Tahuti Miles, and he was in a job position on television recently. And then Swerve also hit his head on an exposed part of the turnbuckle before taking the fall. Then Io Shirai pinned Candice LeRae in 1643 to retain the Women's Championship after a ref bump that led to Johnny Gargano running in wearing a ref shirt, not unlike Bayley at Extreme Rules. Then Toni Storm appeared on the screen to tell Io she's returning to NXT. And then Ember Moon appeared to, she entered to reveal herself as the mystery return that had been teased for a couple weeks. And then in our main event, Finn Balor pinned Kyle O'Reilly in 28:30 to retain the NXT Championship. And after that, Ridge Holland dumped a limp Adam Cole over the barricade as the Undisputed Era frantically gathered, trying to figure out what the heck had happened there. Those times are thanks to Kelly Wells reporting on the show on PW Torch. And we are going to let callers and emailers guide the conversation like we usually do on our Wednesday Daily Cast. But first, I wanted to talk about normally we'd open with the main event or whatever we feel the A story is. And to me, honestly, this is the main story because this is the main thing that kept me from enjoying this show, even when it was having its better moments. I selfishly need to get out of my system my ranting about this Capitol Wrestling Center, just the, you know, redecorated performance center. There's so much about it that I should like. I like that we're finally getting like the Thunderdome treatment on the NXT level, even though I think I had made this argument. I do think the argument is still valid that NXT having a different feel to it, a more collegiate feel, and maintaining that was valuable. But it's cool having the Thunderdome boards. And I like that it looks as much like an underground fight club that you can probably achieve while having a ton of LED boards around. And hearkening back to the original company that Jess McMahon started, that now has just curtailed and gone through however many incarnations to become WWE. Hearkening back to that is cool. Using the W in the middle of the original logo to form the X. There's so much about this that I should like. But they invited in, they said to Sports Illustrated that it was a total of or around 100 people to be in the audience. And this is the usual Performance Center trainees and family and friends. I believe there were many more family and friends of the wrestlers than we usually have seen. They've done that in the past. We've gotten used to it, although we've been very critical of it. And they also, for the first time since the pandemic started and they stopped inviting live fans in, they invited live fans in. And these, the ones that I noticed were the usual front row folks who get exclusive invites. I've aired my grievances about that enough, that WWE has like the secret club within a club within a club that get these secret invites to go to the shows. And right before we went on the air, I actually got an email to what appeared to be the regular NXT ticketing mailing list that they are selling tickets to go to the COVID Wrestling Center, as I'll try to tell myself to remember calling it, probably will be easy to remember, on Wednesday. So I can buy my ticket to go catch the virus. With all the people there, they still piped in audio. And I've gotten used to this in the Thunderdome and on NXT UK, and I like how the audio they're piping in there matches the atmosphere. Like, the sound in the Thunderdome sounds like what it might sound like if people were packing the Amway Center. The sound in on NXT UK sounds like like a sparse audience in that BT Sports studio. This, probably to accommodate the fact that there are Thunderdome boards up there, sounded a little bit more like Edge Orton when they had like Madison Square Garden level sound in the Performance Center. And it was almost like it created almost a mocking dissonance. So that was very distracting, especially during the main event when they had NXT chants. But here's where I'll point out that I mentioned this already on the Daily Cast. I covered a deathmatch indie event a couple of weeks ago, and the reason I covered it is because it was the first indie event in Orlando to have fans since the pandemic started, and the fans cooperated. The people running the event were very deliberate. They just said, like, listen, if you can't abide by distancing guidelines and you won't keep your mask on, then you can stay home. We're streaming it on Twitch, and that's how I covered it, was on Twitch. But all the fans cooperated the whole time. I know that's not a place that I would want to be, but they still abided by what guidelines were there. They stood in their places, feet apart from one another, and they wore their masks the whole time. These fans in the COVID Wrestling Center, they were not wearing masks. Well, not everyone was wearing masks. Most people were. Not everyone was wearing masks, or they were constantly taking them down, or they were wearing them on their chins. And clearly, none of the staff were telling them to fix themselves until around the main event, because it stayed that way for almost the entire show. And then people either got ejected or they got told, like, listen, we're taking you off hard cam or whatever it was, because things were shored up by the time the main event came around, but they still weren't distancing at all. They're still indoors, all packed together. And again, WWE did tell Sports Illustrated that everyone would be tested. But even if that happened, simply relying on that still shows a misunderstanding of how this virus works. And not only is WWE still suffering the effects of a very recent COVID outbreak in their roster, thanks to the ineffectiveness of their policies, but what is the number one story in this country right now? A COVID outbreak in the White House and Republican Congress, thanks to the ineffectiveness of their policies. And that has been contact traced back to a party where everyone said that they had been tested. You can tell that I'm reading off notes at this point, but I knew I had to get this rant out of my system. But here we are with states moving back to phase 3, numbers responding, COVID numbers responding by spiking up to worse than they were in over 2 months. Movie theaters are closing again. Governor Cuomo in New York is talking about closing schools again, and so on. But sure, let's gather 100 people plus staff and wrestlers who are suffering their own outbreak, you know, together. That sounds like a great idea. I was furious watching most of this show, and you probably can't tell because I'm very amped up right now about it. But I'm trying to temper myself. I'm trying to be more calm. I was furious watching this show, and it really distracted me from some of the quality wrestling going on. But that all out of my system. I've probably talked for like 20 minutes now. Nate, if you can give me your thoughts on the Capitol Wrestling Center, and then we'll go to callers.
Sure. So from just like a visual standpoint, I like it. I mean, it's the performance center just kind of dressed up and dolled up. And like Tom said, given that that Thunderdome treatment, you know, and I've talked about it, you know, on Twitter with some people. I've talked about it on PWT Talks NXT, that I kind of wished NXT would have at least gotten a takeover or something in the Thunderdome. So it's kind of cool to see that they're that they are giving NXT a little bit of a better treatment than they normally do in terms of presentation. It's kind of like NXT is always, you know, the little brother. So, you know, I like it from a visual presentation and in that sense. However, I'm pretty much right on board with you for a lot of with all of the COVID stuff. You know, you got people that they're not socially distanced. They're not wearing their masks. There's no like cover on, you know, like where the plexiglass is. So you got people, you know, they're screaming and stuff, and they get their heads, you know, up. They're screaming up in the air. And, you know, up over the plexiglass and stuff. You know, I put this in the hits and misses. Science doesn't stop for wrestling. I'm just as frustrated. I'm not going to keep going on it because this is a podcast about wrestling. But but I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. And, you know, I'm up in New Hampshire. I know you're right in the thick of it down there in Florida. But here up in New Hampshire, it's like, you know, numbers are relatively low and people are just kind of pretending like it doesn't exist. I actually go down into Massachusetts if I got to go to a store or something, because, you know, masks are mandatory. They're not in New Hampshire. So it's like, you know, it's crazy. Just wear your masks, people. Wear your masks, please. Social distance. Yeah. Listen to science.
This is on the heels of on the most recent conference call, also covered by Kelly Wells, Triple H. And the audio is available on one of the, I think it's the flagship this week, Triple H responding to an answer, a question about COVID, saying like, oh, I think it'll be a long time before we get back to normal. Well, if a long time is just a couple days for Mr. H there, you know, Wholesale is starting to bring students back. I guess they've had some students doing labs for a while, but they're starting to integrate students back in. And I think, I don't know, there are multiple reasons why NXT would be moving out of Full Sail temporarily. And one of them, perhaps chief among them, is because Full Sail would not allow them to have live fans. And they clearly wanted to find a way to bring that in. Another one, as a side note, is that obviously students were not going to be working on the NXT tapings. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you've heard me question before whether or not that was actually a thing. I have, and I swear we'll move to callers right after this point. As you've heard me say before, I have asked people who work at Full Sail. I have asked Full Sail students. I've even asked certain people in WWE, what is the relationship with like getting show production and graphic design and film students working on NXT? How is this benefiting Full Sail students like you say it does, but never show that it does, except for when, you know, I think it's once a year they give like 3 students a scholarship or something. I ordered some pizza during I should clarify that it was for my kids. I'm vegan, but I ordered some pizza during SmackDown on Friday, and the pizza delivery guy saw that we had it on, and he was like, oh, do you ever go to that NXT stuff? Well, I went to Full Sail, and yeah, I did some graphic design for them. They do some really cool stuff. So it took me randomly ordering a pizza from a guy having it delivered by a guy who went to Full Sail and seeing that wrestling was on the TV for me to finally learn that, yes, indeed, there is some crossover with the people that work on the show and the Full Sail students. But okay, you've heard us blab enough. If you're still with us, let's go to our first call and let's see who's on the line here, Nate.
All right. So we will go go to the first person that jumped on, and that would be 410. 410, we're going to bring you on right now. State your name and where you're calling from.
It's Reverend Keith from Baltimore. How are you?
Hey, Keith. Thanks for calling, man. What do you got for us tonight?
Well, overall, I would give the show, if I had to rate it, I'd give it a B+. You know, again, you could tell that it was thrown together, but I thought they made the best of what they had to work with. I felt that the main event between Finn and Kyle was a little underwhelming. I mean, it started off a little too slow for me. It picked up around midway, and I think the hook at the end was a little underwhelming as well, by having Ridge Holland toss Adam Cole over the barricade, and now all of a sudden Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish run out as if, you know, to say what happened, when I think it's going to be revealed that they were the ones that actually beat him up, and Ridge probably found him in the back and just carried him out, you know, to them. But what do you guys think about that hook at the end?
Yeah, that's really perceptive. I hadn't thought about it far enough to put that together, but I like where you're coming from there. Nate, what do you think about the whole Ridge Holland thing at the end of the match here?
Yeah, so I haven't quite put a lot of thought into it myself yet, because we were trying to figure out how to get the show started right after NXT went off the air, and I was having some issues with Blog Talk, so I haven't had a lot of time to really process that yet. But I like that. I think that's certainly a way that they could go. You know, they've done in the past with like Dexter Lumis, you know, and we talked actually this Wednesday about how there's a lot of comparisons between Lumis and Ridge Holland. But, you know, they've done that in the past with Lumis, where he's kind of just, you know, been at the right spot, the right time. So they could certainly do something like that with Ridge Holland. But yeah, that was something that I did notice, where, you know, Undisputed Era has kind of done their own, they've kind of done their own thing, you know, over the past handful of weeks here. And, you know, you had all of them come out at the same time. They're all, you know, getting like, you know, trying to, you know, unify and figure out what just happened. You know, it is interesting. And I'm kind of, I'm not 100% sure where they're going to go with it just yet. Like I said, I haven't had a whole lot of time to process it because of technical issues with the show, but, it's certainly intriguing. And, Ridge Holland, I wasn't expecting to really show up in the main event. You know, at least not yet, if ever, you know, I know I've said on our show that, I kind of expected him to be in the, you know, upper mid card, you know, maybe every once in a while toying with the main event, but really more of like a North American title level contender. So I was surprised to see him show up here, but I like the character enough where I'm okay with him actually showing up here and toying with the main event. Whether or not he's actually going to get involved in the main event title scene is yet to be seen, obviously, but it's certainly intriguing.
Yeah, was Ridge glaring at Finn, or had Finn cleared the ring at that point?
Oh, that's a good question. I think
he was glaring at Kyle.
I think he was. I think he was.
I was definitely thrown by this because, of course, as we talked about on the Daily Cast, yet again, NXT had me wondering if this was going to be the Undisputed Era implosion or turn or whatever it's going to turn out to be. And especially after Kyle had done such an excellent job of selling. I mean, this was like, they even had a visual that brought this to mind, was the Bret Stone Cold match, which of course is known for its being a
double
very
turn.
Successful double turn, which this was not. But of course, just putting Austin over so much in his resilience. And I think we got that to a certain extent from Kyle tonight. And I was just thinking, man, they are really building this up to the point where when Adam Cole comes out and beats him up after this, or if they do, if they wait a couple of days and do it like Evolution Randy Orton style on USA, this is going to be real effective because Kyle's definitely getting over his selling here. And good old Darrell, oh man, Darrell saves us. He says that he was glaring at Finn. Thank you, Terrell. He's our unofficial other co-host helping us out, glaring at Finn. So yeah, I mean, I agree. I would be okay with Ridge being popped up to this point. Like you said, they did that with Loomis a little bit as well when Cole was champion. The weird thing that also throws me is that Ridge was just confronting Cameron Grimes, but I guess, I don't know, maybe that's just, speaking of stepping stones to the moon, maybe that was Ridge's own stepping stone to the moon. He's just stepping on and over Cameron to get toward Finn, and Finn needs challengers. So, okay, I think that'll be an interesting match if we get that, and they've definitely got me still curious about this Undisputed Era thing. Keith, anything else for us?
Right, but again, it's too easy or too obvious, Tom, if it's Ridge who's behind Adam Cole's attack. I mean, I understand what you're saying, that they may be using Ridge to step up the Finn. And by the way, in addition to what Darrell just texted, it was Roderick Strong who approached Finn to ask Finn, had he seen anything other than Ridge tossing Adam's beaten up body over the barricade. It was Roderick Strong that approached Finn. I'm not sure if Ridge did or Glad Up. I know Roderick Strong did. But what I'm saying to you, if you look at this from a creative standpoint, it wouldn't make sense if it was Ridge who beat up Adam Cole. You know what I'm saying? And just threw his body over the barricade. I think there's a mystery behind that, and it's going to be revealed on Wednesday night that it was Undisputed. Because if you go back and watch it, you notice how dramatic Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish were. They were a little too overdramatic about Adam Cole being beaten up, you know, as if to play it off. So that's why I believe that they did it, and Ridge would just happen to be the one to find him backstage and threw him out to his compadre. Why would Ridge be the one that beat him up and then throw him out there and walk away? You know, that's why I say it's too obvious. It's a swerve there.
Yeah, and Roddy, definitely not the best actor in the world, but I really like what you're getting at. And I think that, I think that still fits with, my mind was at like, oh man, this will be effective when Adam turns on him. But I think what you're getting at definitely fits what was our other I think probably our prevailing theory. I think a Cole turn was like the secondary theory, but the prevailing theory that that Cole and O'Reilly will be the baby faces coming out of this, and Strong and Fish will be the heels. But I like what you're observing. I definitely think you're picking up on something. So Kelly coming in by saying that getting a jaw X-ray and Kyle is being evaluated. So that probably speaking to the blood that we saw coming from their mouths. But let's see. Keith, do you have another point for us?
Yes. One last thing. I thought it was interesting that they had both Toni Storm and Ember Moon, who was revealed as the mystery person, appear within 5 minutes of each other. That was odd, because normally WWE doesn't do that. I felt that maybe Toni's reappearance after being away 6 to 7 months could have waited till Wednesday night on NXT, since they're going live beginning this Wednesday, every Wednesday hereafter. I just thought it was unusual to have both ladies reappear so soon and on the same show. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And on top of that, not only has Rhea been trying to angle her way back to the championship for months now, but on the Facebook, Triple H's Facebook interview that he does, this time he did it with Mackenzie Mitchell. I think it was her first time conducting that. Rhea came in and she said that she's gonna be looking to challenge Io after this match. And Triple H was like, oh, I think what you mean is you're going to challenge whoever ends up winning. And Rhea then re-delivered the line and made it less specific to Io, just like, oh, yes, absolutely. And not only did that sort of get blown, and I was thinking, oh, I think she just spoiled the finish of the match, but then they replayed the whole thing on the pre-show. And I'm thinking, why didn't you cut out the part where she slipped the line? But oh, well. Yes, I also thought that was odd. I mean, Rhea can still get waylaid by Raquel. But they were building up the Ember Moon thing. And then all of a sudden, Tony just comes on. And Nate and I were even talking about this a little bit before the show, that it was a little odd that Tony comes on the screen with no context. And we're kind of like, wait, so was she the one on the motorcycle? Was she the one with the video packages? And then they go right to Ember. So, I mean, EO obviously is not hurting for challengers here. And I'm not particularly high on Tony, but Tony and EO have a similar relationship to, and even you can throw Rhea in there with them as well. I think that triad of like Rhea, Tony, and EO kind of have the same relationship that I always talked up about Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler going to the finals of the first Mae Young Classic. And you've got Rhea losing to EO in the impromptu semifinals of the second Mae, going on to face Tony in the finals, and then Rhea and Tony facing off in NXT UK. So I think there's an interesting relationship there, even though I'm not personally a fan of what Tony brings to her matches and to her character and whatnot, although this is her chance to prove me wrong. Maybe she's improved. And then, of course, Ember Moon coming back. I mean, we've been waiting for that for so long. Ember just feels like she's always had so much potential but has never really taken off, and hopefully this is a good reframing of her. It's just great to see that she's healed from her Achilles injuries. So before I go on too much longer about that, Nate, any further thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was really strange that it was like, you know, hey, there's Toni Storm, and you know, we haven't seen her in a long time. And personally, I know Tom's not, you know, super, super high on Toni Storm. I like her. I think she's got, she's definitely got some upside. She's not the, she's certainly not the greatest wrestler in the world, but I think she's got that charisma and that it factor that, is going to be worthwhile, you know, in the NXT environment. Here she is, Toni Storm's back. And, you know, like Tom said, I'm like, all right, is she the one that was, you know, in these vignettes or whatever? And then Ember Moon, and it was like, okay, Ember Moon just completely overshadowed Toni Storm. It was odd. It was bizarre. I'm glad to see both women, on the show and then, you know, on the roster. But it was a little strange that they brought them back like at the exact same time. Rhea Ripley. That actually, really, Tom, you kind of mentioned everything that I was going to say about that. So I'll leave that alone. Yeah.
Talking points on that one. Sorry.
Well, you know what? I'm doing my best to be as concise as possible. I'm trying not to yammer on and on like I do on Wednesday night.
So I'll tip the scale the other way and blab forever about COVID. Well, Keith, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you for taking my call and taking the time to talk to me, and have a good night, guys.
All right, you too.
All right, man. Have a good one. Take care. All right. So let me. Okay, cool. So I got Keith off there. So next, I'm going in the order of the people that called in. We're gonna go next to our man Darrell here. Darrell, you should be on. What's going on, man? Thank you for that. Thank you for the save a few minutes ago.
Yes.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good. As well as I can be. I feel like the Takeover brand is continuing to take some body blows in 2020, but we'll get through it, I suppose. I'll get through it because I'm not going to the Performance Center. But how are you, Darrell?
I'm okay, and I liked your rant earlier, Tom. But I got to say this: you have to refocus it because again, your governor put y'all in level 3, so it's like everybody can do what they want to do is on their decision making skills. And when you give a company the decision to make that decision, they're going to go with what's best for them. So
yeah,
I understand people like to blame the companies themselves, but you have to start blaming your government, how it's ran. And yes, we had that breakout at the White House, but they still not mandatory having people come in the White House with, Max. So, I understand that rant and where you want to focus, but we have to refocus that on November into the right people who it should be focused to. So it's hard to blame companies when companies going to do what's best for them. That's just the start off to that. So, you know,
great point. Out of paranoia, I double checked my registration the other day, made sure I was still registered. So I'm good to go. Ballots in the mail.
Okay. So, you know, just to try to ease your mind on the show and understand, and I know that you you went through that, so, but we have to focus that to another place, because you can't really blame the people who running it, because when you put it in the hands of those people, they do it like that. Now, going into what you guys have been talking about and things like that, I think tonight's show was the night of you starting to see factions starting to form. And I'm going to what was the best story and still is the best title, best story run, that's the NXT Cruiserweight title. You see Escobar win and Swerve Scott get helped out with him hitting the head on the exposed part of the turnbuckle, not the turnbuckle itself, but the outside part of it. And we seen Swerve got help. So I like everything about this match. I thought this was the best match of the three that they had so far. I understood the match and everything that happened. I like that they saved Swerve and gave him that out, and looking like he's going to build his own faction. And I want to see how that goes from that moment forward, even when they gave Adonis the interview afterwards and he came on. So, and they look kind of familiar how they got them dressed and stuff like that. So what did you guys think about that, thinking that I'm giving you I'm telling you that they might be a faction? What did you guys think about that, and how did you guys think about that match?
Yeah, I think what you say about the strength of the storytelling definitely helped heighten this, and I feel like the narrative threads on this show as a whole were light during the bell time. I guess just overall, but this was the first match on the card that I felt actually gave us something to sink our teeth into as far as wondering if slash when Legado del Fantasma was going to run in, and then adding the extra factor of Ashanti the Adonis running in to help Swerve. The fact that each of them kicked out of, I mean, definitely Escobar's finisher and then a 450 from Swerve, which was a very believable near fall. I think, so it's not like a high level of storytelling, but I think it was the highest that we had gotten to this point in the night. So that definitely helped me. And what I really responded to here, though, was just that the level of aggression that Swerve got to, we haven't seen that from him in WWE yet. And granted, I haven't seen every single one of his 205 matches, but I have a hard time believing that any of them reached this level. I'm not even sure if we've seen him do the arm snap in NXT yet. It's possible he's broken it out once or twice, but this is the Swerve that made him my favorite independent wrestler when he was still on the independents. I really liked seeing that. And hey, they actually gave this match a video package. I didn't think it was gonna, every match tonight got a video package. I thought this was gonna be one that they would just throw like a little, oh, recently on NXT, and then go straight to it, sort of no nonsense. And Beth even brought, you know, not by name, but she brought up Lucha Underground by referencing Swerve's time as Killshot working under a mask, and so, you know, saying that he reveres Lucha the way that Escobar says that he does. So yeah, I agree that there was some stuff going on here, and I think that we've got an interesting character to keep an eye on now in Ashanti. In that, you know, he gave a fine promo afterwards, and if they want to do a Loomis or a Ridge and pop him up to, or, you know, possible Ridge and pop him up to title contention with Escobar, sure, there aren't too many other people breathing down Escobar's neck right now, and they can probably get away with a number of tag matches in the meantime to maybe build to this Halloween Havoc that also got announced on the show. Nate?
Yeah, so the Halloween Havoc thing, I'm kind of excited about, mostly just because I want to see a giant pumpkin on set. If they don't give me a giant pumpkin on set, I'm going to be really, really disappointed. So give me a pumpkin. Give me a pumpkin. As far as the match goes, this is probably my favorite match of the card. Earlier in the night, I gave this a thumbs, gave the overall show a thumbs up. And while I do give the overall show a thumbs up in terms of wrestling, I agree. This really wasn't this was still a thrown together show. There wasn't a whole lot in terms of, you know, story advancement otherwise. There were in some spots, but, you know, for the most part, I really, really loved this match. this is the first time we've seen this level, of kind of fire out of Swerve. The build of the match, the story that they told, the fact that, he had that win over Escobar, kind of hanging over Escobar's head here, all of it, really dug it. Ashante Adonis coming in was obviously something that, I didn't see coming. I don't think anybody really necessarily did, but I liked it because obviously it helped to even out the odds, against Legado del Fantasma coming in and interfering, which we all expected and knew was going to happen. But what I really liked out of him was the promo we cut later on in the night. The style of promo that he cut and his mic work really stood out to me. And I'm hoping they give him some more time on the mic, some more time on TV. We saw him. I think we both Tom and I called him Adrian Adonis at first when he first came out, a few weeks ago. And I think that was the first time we saw him under that name. I know we saw him under a different name, and I can't think of what it was off the top of my head. But it was the first time we saw him under that name. I like him. So if he starts tagging with and this kind of goes into the whole stable thing that Darrell was talking about. I wasn't necessarily thinking about a stable per se, but I wouldn't be against it because it would be a stable that Swerve could use to fight against Legado del Fantasma here. But I was at least thinking of an alliance or tag team or something between Adonis and Swerve. In a way, I feel like it's a bit of a step back for Swerve because of the story that he was just getting, the story he was just involved in and all that stuff. Which is something we talked about on PWT Talks NXT this past week. It's like, Swerve, where does he go from here if he loses? There's going to be, there's places he can go, but it's kind of he's kind of plateaued. It's like, it doesn't really make sense for him to go up to North American title, level because, he didn't get the job done here. Why would he necessarily go up there in a storyline perspective? So if he does start tagging with Adonis, I'm okay with it. I'm for it. I think it would be fun and entertaining TV, but at the same time, it does feel, at least to me, like a bit of a step back. Overall, I continue to really, really, really dig what they're doing with the Cruiserweight Championship. I feel like a brokered record kind of saying it, but it's like, when I was a kid, the Cruiserweight title, light heavyweight title, on the NXT, the WWE product anyway, was always a joke. WCW is the one that gave it the time of day. And I feel like this is WCW Cruiserweight title level. This is some good stuff. And I really want to continue to see this happen and kind of progress. In terms of further contenders for the Cruiserweight title, there's somebody that we're not thinking of, and I keep forgetting about too, and that's Jordan Devlin. He's still technically the legitimate Cruiserweight title. Escobar is the interim champion. It's something that they don't necessarily mention on TV, but he's still listed. Jordan Devlin's still listed as the Cruiserweight champion on NXT.com. They both are. So that's something we got to keep in mind too. So I'm wondering, now the travel restrictions are lifted and, Florida, apparently the virus no longer exists in Florida. I'm wondering if we'll see Devlin show up. That could certainly start to play a role in the Cruiserweight story.
And we've got a couple more callers. So, Darrell, do you have one more item for us tonight?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I like what I seen from Kushida. I like what I seen from Kushida tonight. And I like that he went back and he masked on Velveteen Dream and he did whatever. I know y'all was talking about contending for the Cruiserweight, but I don't think Kushida should even go back down to being a Cruiserweight, and he should be working his way up to either a North American title reign or something like that. What do you guys feel like? And also, just to leave you with something, those two women that they introduced tonight, that wasn't the first time they introduced two characters at one time on NXT like that. So introducing Toni Storm, who was an NXT UK wrestler, who used to have one of the best matches the match that happened a week ago happened. I like her coming back, and she got a new look. And they added new two women who added to that women's division, and now that women's division looks awesome. But again, who would you like to see Castillo go against? And do you like to see him go up against the main title, the main two titles, North American or NXT title reign?
Yeah. I guess most recently, what was it? Ciampa and Balor showing up on the same show. That's the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, that's what stands up to me.
Nate, I'll let you take the Kushida thing first. What do you think are Kushida's next steps after destroying Dream tonight? Possibly, fingers crossed, writing him back off TV, even though we've tried to predict that one twice already.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So, you know, it's funny. I was, I think kind of earlier in the night, I was thinking, you know, Ridge Holland might be somebody that he could feud with because, you know, Ridge is kind of coming back and he's, I feel like they're kind of at that same level, at least before Ridge Holland showed up in the main event. So I'd have to think about that a little bit more. I mean, I could see him, you know, probably feuding, maybe getting in some sort of a North American title contention feud here or something along those lines. But I feel like the story that they're telling with him right now is going to lead into another story that may not necessarily be the title. I could be wrong, but and I'm not sure who it necessarily is. But for some reason, it's like I don't feel like, and not that he's not worthy of the title or something, but I feel like a North American title reign. He absolutely is, and I hope he does go for it. But it's like I just kind of have this gut feeling like they're doing something with him that is almost doesn't need the title. At least I'm hoping. Maybe it's wishful thinking. I don't know. But I'm kind of hoping that that's kind of the direction they go with him. You know, although, like I said, if they do something, you know, another they've been really high on tournaments for number one contenders recently. So I can kind of see him, you know, in something like that. You're trying to figure out who the next contender is. If they're still kind of throwing things together because of the whole COVID outbreak and all of that stuff. But as far as like actually singling somebody out and naming somebody, I'm not sure. Bronson Reed comes to mind because it's like their styles clash, their size difference, and all of that. Obviously you've got heel versus or face versus face there. So I'm not really sure. So I'm gonna move on rather than just continue to flounder back and forth. As far as the match with Velveteen Dream went. So I like the match. It's hard for me to like a Velveteen Dream match right now. Just due to all the stuff surrounding him, it's hard for me to separate, the allegations and the lack of, any transparency from the company on them really, from the character. So, you know, whatever, but I tried when I was writing the hits and misses, and I'm going to try now. I dug the whole Doc Brown thing that Velveteen Dream did. Obviously Kushida, he's a big Back to the Future fan. Yeah. Marty McFly, vest and all that stuff. I thought it was cool that, you know, he dressed up as Doc Brown. Kushida takes like super offense to that, like, charges the ring before Dream even finishes up his entrance and, kick off the match. Like we've talked about in the past, Kushida or, you know, on PWT Talks NXT on Wednesday nights, Kushida's showing this fire that we haven't seen out of him before in the NXT environment. We haven't seen in New Japan. This is cool. I'm really hoping that it leads somewhere for him. I'm so glad that he had that beatdown after the match, because throughout the entirety of this matchup, I'm like, what are they doing with Kushida? For a couple few weeks now, he's, like I said, he's had this fire and he's like just beating up everybody he's come in contact with. And then for a good portion of this match, he just wasn't in control. And it was almost like this, not necessarily a David and Goliath type of a thing, but like, I wrote this down in the hits and misses. The vibe that I ended up getting from his win, from the actual finish of this, was like almost 1-2-3 Kid versus Scott Hall from like way, way, way back in the day. It was like underdog overcoming you know, the one that you were expecting to win. When going into this match, I was like, Kushida is going to win hands down. And as the match was progressing, Kushida's, you know, he's kind of getting beat down. And I still had a feeling he was going to win. It made the most sense. But I really wish he had a more, he got a little bit more offense and he was a little bit stronger throughout the course of the match. I feel like that was kind of fixed after the match ended with that brutal beatdown. But I feel like if they kind of did both of them, it probably would have come off better and he would have looked stronger, at least in my eyes. So yeah, that's, I think that's all I get to say about Kushida and Dream.
And I suggested earlier that the first two matches didn't tell too much of a story, but at least this one did have that vengeful fire behind it. It did feel like guys with a grudge. I like seeing Kushida like this. And the live crowd seems to be mostly booing Dream, which, you know, if we had had more of a heads up on when NXT was actually going to be bringing fans back, I would have said, man, they can't put Dream out in front of a crowd because or they're not going to want to anyway, because people will just destroy the guy. To be fair, this is also a lot of the people in the audience are that typical Full Sail crowd. So maybe they'll buy into the product more. But as we suggested, when Velveteen Dream turned heel, it seems like it's just a move of convenience that now framing him as someone that is supposed to get booed means that when he is getting booed, that's the desired reaction. So there's that. I think in other contexts, we could have looked at the post-match attack as a heel turn, but it's also impossible to turn heel against Velveteen Dream right now, no matter how much he cries out in pain for Kushida to stop. So I think this puts Kushida in a position where he's a babyface who can work a vicious tweener role and be positioned about against just about anybody on the roster. So I do still look to that North American Championship, and maybe not right away, because I agree with you, Nate, that something seems to be going on with him that is not, it doesn't need a title right now. So if they keep on feeding him people to destroy, then fantastic. But I could see it going to Damian Priest. And even with both of them being baby faces, they could put on a hell of a match together. And Priest is somebody who's had a lot of that, shall I say, Keith Lee-esque main roster talk around him, where a lot of people look at this guy and they're like, man, why isn't he on the main roster already? Which had in the back of my mind, as certain as I was that Gargano was going to go over tonight, I was still thinking like, man, with this draft coming up, I wonder if they might just switch the title and move Priest up to one of the bigger shows. Speaking of, Kelly did just mention that Triple H was asked about the draft on the conference call, and he said that not everything is set in stone yet, but the Garganos are definitely staying on NXT because their story is still being told with Johnny and Candace, so for what that's worth. But I could see where Priest has already had, not that it needs to get cut short or anything, but Priest has already had what I think is a very impressive North American title run ever since he's taken that belt. Every single one of his outings has been more and more impressive. I already liked the guy, and I like him even more now with what he's been exhibiting. So I think they could go to a Kushida maybe as soon as Halloween Havoc, but not necessarily that quickly, and actually move the title over, and Priest will be looking at a call-up perhaps. So, all right. Well, any thoughts to wrap up? And thank you for calling, Darrell.
Only thought would be, I know y'all were talking about Jordan Devlin, but if you got Velveteen Dream on the screen and you just had him right now, you can't put in on Jordan Devlin, especially as a babyface after what the speak out movement and stuff like that. So I don't think that. And just going back to the women and seeing that Toni Storm had came over, hopefully that means the tag team can be strengthened by finally getting Grizzled Young Veterans over and maybe getting Pete Dunne back over, because Toni Storm, she stayed over in the UK. So if she's coming over, then those two competitors can come over also. So hopefully we get to see that. And it looks like the women division is the strongest division that they have right now, just with adding two people.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree with that. Well, thank you very much, as always, for the call, Darrell. Who is caller number three of the night, Nate?
All right. So before we go over there, I just wanted to make a quick point for one of the things Darrell was talking about. So we're talking about Devlin and things like that. It's almost, you know, it's kind of unfair to be talking about Devlin and hoping he comes back to feud. And at the same time, I'm condemning Dream and, you know, very similar allegations and things like that. The reason for that is I don't necessarily think that, I'm starting to think that, like, this whole, like, beat down of Dream and all of that is almost their idea of a punishment. And I'm kind of wondering if they might do something similar with Devlin. You know, this is all obviously conspiracy theory, Nate, you know, just talking here, but, yeah, I'm wondering if that might be it. I'm kind of hoping it's not, and I'm hoping that, you know, there's actual legitimate punishment, but I'm hoping that's not the way they're looking at it. So I don't know. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that at all, but
yeah,
something crossed my mind.
It's still TV time. I don't know. Like, we've seen people buried on TV. We've seen people buried in main events.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
It's still TV time. Especially nowadays, fans look beyond how the wrestler is framed. Like, they'll look at someone like an Austin Theory and see and we talk about it on our show, just how damn good of a worker he is. And that seems so much more valuable to a lot of the NXT fan base. So I think that even with that level of punishment, if they just want to turn around next week and give Austin Theory title contention, then that still fits in the language of how WWE and NXT tells its stories.
Yeah, it makes sense. No. All right. Well, with that out of the way, we did have somebody drop off. We had two more people in line. We got a bunch of people listening. So if you do want to, jump in, hit one and we'll bring you on after we bring on 708. 708, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Vincent from Chicago.
Hey, Vincent. What do you think of
Takeover
tonight?
A few things. So, one, I think I'm a little higher on the revamped NXT look than the two of you are. I think it looks really good. I think they did something that WWE main roster should have done, and that is add the developmental talent with the LED boards, with the the people on the screens. And yeah, it just offered a more fuller look, you know, because it's still kind of eerie with the fans on the screens on the main roster, but the screens with the people banging on the plexiglass, it adds much more of a fuller, realistic element to it. And then, you know, the shots with the and then I like the placement of the boards as well. They had them higher up, and it just gave it, you know, during the matches, it gave a much more interesting, much more cinematic look, I guess you could say. The cages around the ring, I could take it or leave it, but overall, I think it. Very good look for NXT.
Yeah, I think you make some very good points. Looking beyond my previously stated concerns, I actually do really like the aesthetic of it. When they showed the preview, which actually that same footage opened the show tonight, but when they showed that little preview of what it was going to look like on Twitter, I was like, okay, it looks exactly like Full Sail did, just with some chain link now. But once we got the full effect of it, once the show was on, it's obviously, it adds more to it. And I definitely echo your thoughts on that part of it. And I think the setting is distinct, and it evokes a feeling for the fights that contextualizes them just a little bit differently. It feels like a fight pit. And I don't mean to correlate it to Thatcher versus Riddle with that same nomenclature, but it feels like a gladiator pit. So yeah, I do agree with what you're getting at there. It's going to be very hard for me to set aside my other concerns with it, with the live fans and attendance, especially with now they're selling tickets to the Wednesday shows. But yes, I do like the look. Nate, do you have any further thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, as far as the aesthetic goes, visually, I think it's great. You know, COVID aside, I like the visual of actually seeing people, there, and then the boards in the background. And I do like the fact that the boards are higher up, and I feel like on the main roster where they're kind of staggered with the seats, the LED boards are staggered with the seats. It provides more of like that main roster arena feel, where this kind of gives more of that Full Sail type feel, smaller crowd. So I like that. And everything they did with that visually, I like. Like I said earlier, science doesn't stop for wrestling. So having 100 people, 100 people just in the audience, and then not to mention the wrestlers, the staff, and all that in a building. And, I'm looking at the building, and it's like, we've seen backstage footage of the Performance Center before. And, we've obviously, WrestleMania was at the Performance Center, Raw, SmackDown was at the Performance Center for quite some time after the pandemic broke out. It's not that big of a room for, that many people when you're talking about social distancing and aerosols and, things like that. So, it looks good, and it's definitely it bounds and leaps over, no crowd noise and empty seats and things like that. I said this to Tom and Kelly in our group Skype chat earlier tonight. It's like, it was nice to see the fans. It was nice to kind of get somewhat of an organic reaction here and there, because, like Tom said, earlier in the night, they were pumped in. They did pump in, audio, here and there, but there were times where you could actually get an organic, the organic crowd reaction came through, and that was nice as a wrestling fan. But as somebody that, has studied science for his entire life, I'm kind of like, God, this watching the show's killing me. There's two sides to the coin. From a visual production standpoint, I really like it. From is the WWE potentially going to kill somebody standpoint, I don't like it.
Yeah, this was the closest to Justin Jamesing as I've been when Justin finally decided that WWE's booking of black wrestlers was he states it in more. There's more to it than that, the Saudi Arabia connection and everything, but particularly what he said, and pre-speaking out movement and everything, was that he hates watching NXT, loving Velveteen Dream, and just having no hope that Dream is actually going to go anywhere on the main roster. And he finally bowed out. And tonight I was just like, oh my God, like, I'm totally going to keep doing this show, but this is the closest I've been to just being like, guys, I'm so angry watching this. But I do agree with Vincent's points about how good it looks, totally, just from an aesthetic standpoint. Vincent, do you have anything else on that or another point for us?
A little bit on that, and then I'll bounce to my next point. I think you could reduce the crowd by maybe 25 to 30%. There is a distinction between being a wrestling fan and then just being a human, a compassionate human. But without getting too political, I think if they show up, they know the risk, and, just leave it at that. I'm able to compartmentalize that part of it from the wrestling presentation. To bounce to my second point, I think I'm a little bit higher on the main event than the two of you are. I thought it was a really good match. From the little bit of New Japan that I've seen in my lifetime, it reminded me of a New Japan match. It was just very stiff, very hard-hitting. It sounds like there may be some legit injuries from what you guys reported earlier in the show. So, yeah, I like the show. I like the match. I like the angle at the end. The caller before brought up some very good points. And then I think on a more macro level, Kyle O'Reilly and, I'll bring this up as well, Jey Uso on the main roster on SmackDown, I think these tag team wrestlers being inserted in main event pictures, in main event storylines, really does help out the tag team division in the long run. Because now, when the Usos are back together, I think that gives them a little bit more of a push because, okay, well, we've seen Jey Uso in a main event program before. So maybe fans start taking the Usos more seriously. People start taking Undisputed Era a little more seriously. Now that we've seen Adam Cole in the main event scene, he's had the NXT title. Kyle O'Reilly has battled for the NXT title. So, yeah, I like the trend that WWE's going lately with tag team wrestlers being put into serious single feuds.
Very good point. Nate, I will let you take this one first, but I will clarify that against whatever I may have implied earlier to suggest I didn't like the main event, I did actually very much like this main event. I thought it was match of the night for me, and I loved the storytelling and the way that it changed the pace from what the other matches had been previously. I think it really put Kyle over huge.
I think one of you was not that high on it. Still, you said it was good, but just not, you know, wasn't match of the night. I thought this was match of the night.
Yeah, I agree. Nate, what do you think?
So I know I said that I wasn't super sold on the Ridge Holland thing, just because it was a little weird. But as far as like the match itself, like the actual wrestling and the story that they told throughout, and I apologize, I'm like on the brink of a coughing fit. So if I sound a little weird and shaky, that's why.
I can
take
it from you if you need me to.
No, that's okay. I think I'm okay. As far as the match goes, like the match itself, the wrestling and the story and all of that was great. You know, we've talked about in the past, Kyle O'Reilly, he's kind of a, you know, in whatever, one of the things I wrote in the hits and misses, I called him a diamond in the rough. He's somebody, you know, they kept calling him like a secret tonight. You know, and I forget who it was on the main roster that was Buddy Murphy. They kept calling himself, you know, like Pro Wrestling Secret. And I feel like Kyle O'Reilly is kind of like that. He's such a great tag team wrestler that he kind of blends into that tag team scene, and you don't really think of him as a singles competitor. I mean, unless you've watched him, you know, in New Japan or in Ring of Honor, where you have places where he has done some single stuff. But if you're kind of contained to the WWE environment, you don't think of him as a singles guy. I think he really, really shined tonight. His performance against Balor was great. There was a lot of the match where, you know, Balor was on the offensive, and you know, O'Reilly was essentially trying to claw back, you know, back into contention and kind of, you know, get, you know, kind of take control of the match over again. And I thought that this was some great storytelling here, because like you think about it, Finn Balor, he's like a notch above, O'Reilly on the card. If you think about it, right? He comes from the main roster. Yeah, he came from NXT and then went back to main roster. You know what I mean? But he was the first Universal Champion. He's got all this credibility and these accolades behind him. So it kind of makes sense that, you know, throughout the match, it was kind of like O'Reilly was clawing his way back and trying to fight over and over and just fight back, you know, with everything that he had to kind of, you know, take it to Balor. But, you know, I thought he did a great job with it. It I didn't think he was necessarily going to win. You know, we talked about it on Wednesday. You know, I think I kind of gave him, you know, some odds to win here. I was kind of hoping he would win and we'd see some sort of a feud between him and Cole, but more of starting a friendly feud, kind of like, you know, Cole's like, hey, that's my belt, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it built into something, you know, maybe even going into like, not necessarily WrestleMania, but whatever the takeover is that, you know, is WrestleMania season. That could have been a cool feud. That's kind of what I was pulling for and in my head hoping for. But at the same time, I knew the odds of that were probably pretty low and we were going to see Finn Balor retain. You know, and then the inclusion of Ridge Holland and all that, you know, afterwards was a little strange. I liked what the first caller brought up tonight, you know, and you know, Ridge Holland maybe just found him and it was probably Roddy and Fish or something like that. I don't know, but I do like that. It makes sense. It seems like something that they would do. But no, as far as like the match itself in terms of entertainment, match quality, story and everything, I thought was great. You know, like I said, it was just really that the ending finish that was a little, I wouldn't say it was even a miss. I didn't give it a miss in the hits and misses, but it was kind of like, I'd give it like a C, you know?
All right. And yeah, whether, or the possibility that on what you were saying a moment ago, that Strong and, Fish hired Ridge, or
yeah, there's that
know,
too.
Now they're in
yeah.
cahoots, but, I think that really just to put it in a nutshell, forcing Kyle to fight from beneath after taking that spin kick to his midsection, was it just made this match really money, for me. And yes, I really like where Vincent is coming from with the tag team observation. I've gushed about the Roman and Jay program. And part of that is because we know that Jay is fodder for Roman and it's working so well to put Roman's new character over, but Jay is beautifully holding up his own end. And it does genuinely have me interested in what the Usos together are going to do next once Jimmy's back. And even, I mean, if anybody listened to this week's NXT 8 years back, I was a little disappointed that we didn't get an Usos match on it. I was expecting that this was a week we were going to get an Usos match. And yeah, even looking 8 years back to what they were doing on NXT then, I'm that much more interested in examining it because of what Jay has done in this little singles run that he's gotten.
There was one thing I wanted to touch on that I forgot to mention is I am 100% in agreement with that as well. If you know, you've got one member of a tag team that's doing something that's super important main event level, it's absolutely going to raise the entire, you know, tag team up. It certainly could also have the unintended side effect of turning the person that didn't get that spotlight into the Marty Jannetty. I think if it, you know, they book it the right way, you actually, you know, absolutely raise them up. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Of course, you know, most of these we've seen just turn into singles careers, like Edge, for example, although Edge, of course, continued to dabble in tag teams like with Hogan and Randy. But just for that one example. I think like if Jay does not continue to be a singles wrestler and this was presumably just for this Roman feud. We've made our point there. We seem to all be in agreement. Vincent, any further thoughts or closing statements?
So last thing, I've been trying to pinpoint what about Candice LeRae's heel turn is not clicking with me. And her match tonight with Io Shirai was pretty good. Not great, I don't think, but you know, I thought it was pretty good, the high end of good. And I think what it is, and you guys are the NXT experts, let me know, that I feel that the NXT women are so likable. The way NXT portrays them, they're so likable. I have a hard time rooting against the heels. Like, I like Candice LeRae, babyface Candice LeRae. Like, she was awesome. Ember Moon returned. if she comes back as a heel, I might have a hard time rooting against her. Like, Ember Moon is very likable. Toni Storm is very likable. Kaden Carter, Casey, I'm probably going to butcher her name. Is it Cantazara or Cantazaro?
Yeah, Catanzaro.
Close enough, yep.
So, like, the NXT women are very likable in contrast to how the main roster portrays their heel women, like Nia Jax. I want to see her lose. I don't like her. You know, Bayley. I want to see Bayley lose. I want Sasha to get her comeuppance against Bayley. But with NXT, their women are so, babyface or heel, their women are so likable. And I think that's what's not clicking with me with Candice LeRae's heel turn. Like, they've tried everything to get us to not like her, and I still find myself liking her.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's plagued wrestling, and especially NXT, for a long time, is just that we it feels like we are on a journey with these wrestlers. And I was thinking about that in the match tonight, and I don't know if I really have any new thoughts on it, but specific to Candice, it really feels like she does belong in that echelon of NXT champions. She shouldn't just go down in history as the Natalia, who was a really good worker who put everybody else over. And it seems like even if she had won this on the belt shot even if they did something silly, like at Extreme Rules, when Bayley counted the three and it wasn't actually an official match finish and Sasha wasn't even officially the champion, even if they had done something like that, I would have been like, you know what? Good for Candice. She's finally on that still short, relatively short list of NXT women's champions that is held in such high esteem. So I agree with that. And this is tangential to the point, but it also stood out to me on commentary how Wade Barrett said, well, Candice LeRae, she's always been on the side of good, or she's always been a good guy, or whatever he said. And I'm like, dude, don't make it that much of a good versus evil on the nose thing. But, complex is the word that's coming to me. It's not what I want to use, but let's just say complex can of worms that the heel face dynamic that we always have to deal with is, do you have any, are you finally going to solve it for us tonight, Nate?
Oh, probably not. But no, it is, it's something that, I mean, yeah, obviously it's plagued wrestling for years. It's, you know, kind of going back, the first wrestler that I really connected with, like, you know, you were talking about going on a journey with these people, and it's like the first one I really connected with was Mick Foley. And, you know, I remember the first time I saw him, he was a face, and then he did something, and he did it. It was a heel turn. I want to say it was the Dude Love corporate turn. I don't remember. I was young, but he did something, and it was he turned heel, and I remember thinking, like, I was, like, personally offended. I was, like, personally offended by it. I couldn't quite figure out, like, what was going on. But at the same time, as I got older, because at the time I think I was, like, 7, 8 years old, but, like, as I got older, you know, going on these journeys with wrestlers, it's like, you know, my point being with Mick Foley is like, I started hating him. And then once he, you know, turned face again and kind of became that lovable, goofy Mick Foley, Mankind with Mr. Sacco and everything. You know, by that point, I knew wrestling was real or was fake and all this stuff, but or scripted, not fake, scripted. But yeah, by that point, you know, I knew it was scripted, and I was able to kind of go on that journey with him. And no matter what he did, I was like, I was always on the Mick Foley bandwagon. Here with Candice LeRae, I certainly see that kind of being part of the problem because, yeah, Candice, you know, historically, you know, I don't know a whole heck of a lot about her time on the indies, but everything that I know about her time on the indies, she kind of played that happy-go-lucky Candice. So anybody that, you know, followed her on the indies, anybody that followed her prior to this heel turn, that's the way you think about her. And, knowing her, you know, following her, if you do outside the ring or anything, yeah, she's like a sweetheart. So I get it. It's kind of hard to buy in sometimes to even if they're doing a great, fantastic job portraying a heel, it's kind of hard to buy into that, you know, that work. you know, I don't know if that's necessarily why, you know, why you're having an issue, you know, connecting with it. But it certainly makes sense. You know, and, but personally, I think she's doing a great job. It's certainly working for me, everything that she's doing with Gargano. You know, the kind of the video package that they did tonight where she was talking about how, you know, the Gargano way and how that's kind of, now that she's followed that, it's like opened up doors for her. I forget what, you know, the words were, but you know what I mean? It's kind of, it's shown her the light and it's made her a better person, better wrestler and all that. It's kind of like, you know, you in real life, you get a friend that might start following something that they shouldn't be or whatever. And they think it's, you know, they get caught up in like an MLM scheme, you know, multi-level marketing scheme or something like that. You try to talk them out of it. That's kind of like where I feel like it is. It's kind of like, it's almost, she doesn't know any better. You know, in a way. And maybe that's might be why, you know, it's not necessarily connecting with you, if that makes any sense. But no, I mean, you know, I kind of rambled on a lot, you know, enough about it. But I definitely understand it. But I think she's doing a great job with it.
Yeah, I think it helps that I'm a little more on board with this in this context because they have been very twerpy and their segments toe the line very nicely. Of they are entertaining, but you still don't really want to see them come out on the winning end, except for in situations like this, where, again, regardless of what her alignment is, it feels like this would be an important notch, an important milestone in the Candace journey. So we almost, no matter how effective the framing is, we still look through it. Although on that subject of them being twerpy, we got another one of those awesome Johnny Gargano moments tonight where the ref was trying to do the "you're out of here," and Johnny, wearing a stolen referee shirt, was going, "No, you're out of here," and they went back.
You're out of here. Times.
So he's had some good moments like that lately. But again, twerpy enough that I still don't want to. I want to laugh at him, but not root for him. Well, thanks so much for the call, Vincent.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call. Have a good night, gentlemen. Take care of that call.
You too.
All right, man.
Awesome calls tonight. Hey, really, really hey, good. Really good points. As we start to wrap things up, I'll bring up Gargano versus Priest briefly because we didn't really pass through it. I think a big reason for that is because there isn't really too much to cover. My analysis of it is just that it was one of those matches that NXT seems to like to give you when they feel like they're moving into a new phase of what NXT is, and we're getting the Capital Wrestling Center debuting tonight, so they open it up with just a fast and furious match. Gargano's style is usually marked by bringing down the pace, Eddie Guerrero style, to build it back up again later. This was just fast and furious the whole time. The guy's going move for move, with Priest going over clean. And I feel like this was just a way to usher in the fans coming back and the new look, similar to how we got Adam Cole versus Matt Riddle when NXT first went to USA. I think it was kind of like that. So not too much more to say on it than that. What about you?
Yeah, no, I pretty much completely agree. It was a great match. It was energetic, fun to watch. But it was pretty much inconsequential, especially with Priest retaining, because we were talking, we figured that, Thursday Daily Cast on Wednesday, we were talking, we kind of figured that we were either going to see the women's championship or the North American championship change hands simply because of the celebration at the end of the night. There was part of me that felt like because they were both celebrating the end of the night, you know, the tried and true WWE trope of if you know, the challenger stands strong at the end of the go home show, they're both, you know, they're going to lose. I was kind of thinking that they might, you know, stand by that, but because this was such a thrown together show and out of the blue and all that, I kind of figured they might give us something. Obviously they didn't. Because they didn't, and because, you know, Priest retained here, it did kind of just seem like it was a, a match that they gave us that they knew was going to be good. They knew it was going to deliver. It was going to be a great match to kick off the show. First match back in front of fans. I think it was good, but yeah, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to talk about it. I do have one other point that I meant to mention on the women's thing, on the women's match that I am going to bring up here though. So you were talking about giving Candice like a quick, like little token run. And as much as I would love to see that, like a quick little token run, at the same time, I don't know if I want to actually see a quick token run in the lineage of the NXT women's title, considering how strong it's been booked. Yeah. That's the only caveat I have to that. That was the only thing that I wanted to mention.
Totally agreed. They, as I say over and over again, they have continued to keep that belt as like the most protected, what's the word I always use for it? Whatever. Yeah. You look at the lineage.
Yeah.
And it's just like only the most elite of the division at any given time was holding it. There have been no duds, even when they went back to Charlotte. And I know, you know, that's just ripe for criticism and there are definitely some things you can say about it that we won't get into, but still, you know, it was Charlotte and she still had great matches and elevated people like Mia Yim. So,
exactly.
All right. Well, finally, we have one email from JB from Detroit. JB asks us about Halloween Havoc. He says, what do you think about the announcement of Halloween Havoc returning as a branded NXT show on the 28th? What, if anything, do you think they'll do different for the event outside of possibly loading it? Also, will we get the Pumpkin Demon King Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt that we never got on the main roster? As always, love the show. Thank you, JB. Man, everybody,
I forgot about
that. On that. And I really wanted to see Bray Wyatt as Sister Abigail, assuming that's what we were going to get, because even though that doesn't sound good on paper, the Bray Wyatt character is so fascinating, despite the fact that it's very hard to cram what is fascinating about him into a logical wrestling, somebody has to win by a pinfall or submission at the end of the match kind of way. Even though there's a lot that doesn't work about it, he's fascinating, and yet they refused to ever further it. Bray Wyatt is that guy who loves to leave breadcrumbs and you follow them. And like I say over and over again, I'm sure these things, these breadcrumbs do amount to something in the mind of Wyndham Rotunda. But as Bray Wyatt, they don't. And so if they were going to have him come out as Sister Abigail or do something along those lines, as silly as Pumpkin Balor was going to be, the various incarnations of the demon, like they showed in the replay package tonight, the Jack the Ripper thing. I'm like, yeah, cool. Because I'm in London, I'm going to dress up like a guy who legitimately murdered prostitutes in your city years ago or whatever. It was like, okay, maybe not. But yeah, anyway, enough about that. I have a couple of very brief thoughts, but I know you're excited about the Halloween Havoc prospect. So what do you think, Nate?
Yeah, so, you know, Halloween Havoc. I wasn't a huge, huge, huge WCW guy growing up. I've talked about it a few times in PWT.NXT. It's like I'd usually watch like the cruiserweights and then I'd flip over to Raw. But not always. It was kind of few and far between. It was kind of really whoever was on. Halloween Havoc's just a brand that I've always really liked. I don't necessarily know why. I remember watching one of them with a friend. I was over his house and his parents let us order it. Couldn't even tell you what it was or who was on the show. I just remember there was a giant pumpkin. But it's a brand that I've always really liked. I liked the pumpkin. I liked, you know, and obviously it's a big show for WCW. I know it was kind of probably like a Survivor Series type level show for them. It's a brand that I feel like has a lot of goodwill with the fans. Matter of fact, I think it was actually just yesterday. There was a post on Reddit and one of the top posts was like, I wish they'd bring back Halloween Havoc. And that's not the first time I've seen it. That's just the most recent time I've seen it. So it's a brand that I know people are clamoring to have come back. And if they don't give me a pumpkin, I'm going to be upset. That's all I'm going to say. The what I don't like about it is it's less than a month away. We just we just had a thrown together show. Now we're going to get another thrown together show. I kind of wish they'd go back to the whole five big shows a year format that they did for so long. But, that's the only thing. I don't think we're going to get Bray Wyatt on the show either, but, I'd like to see it. That whole thing was pre-Demon, right? Like, he wasn't...
That was main roster stuff.
I know it was main roster, but it was Bray Wyatt. Fiend. Well, I don't know why I kept saying Demon.
Oh, pre-Fiend.
Pre-Fiend. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, and then that was when the match got canceled thanks to the mumps.
Yeah, that's right. I guess before we wrap up the show... we're going to go to 623.
623.
Yeah, 623. Go ahead and state your name. Where are you calling from?
Hey, Nate. Hey, Tom. This is Brian calling from Phoenix Senior, PW Torch VIP subscriber. How are you both doing this evening?
Hey.
Hey, man. Glad
you're doing good, Brian.
Yeah, I was listening for most of the entire time, but I had to go run and grab dinner real quick. You know, it's still early here in Phoenix. It's 8:24, so I wanted to grab something for National Taco Day. So that's what's for dinner tonight.
I gotcha.
Wait, today's National Taco Day, and I didn't know it.
I had to put it back in my calendar because it wasn't my calendar, so I didn't get an alert. And so I went online and I saw something came from Facebook like 2 years ago. Went out and did it. So I tell you. Hey guys, I'm not going to keep you too long, and I hope both have a real good day. And of course, always thanks for all the audio. I appreciate it . So I liked how tonight we had two Tom triggers. And the triggers, of course, would be full school education and then performance center ticketing. So it was interesting that those two things came up. So I was going to – unfortunately, I had to – when I went out to my car, I had to hang up and then call back in when Darrell was talking. So I think he already talked about Gargano and LeRae. The part I'll ask you to – I'm going to ask you about them. What do you think is next for them? Because I did hear where Kelly said that Triple H said in a lot of that, that they're going to be their story still to be told in NXT. But the part I want to go to is something that Nate said and Tom, how you opened up with. I'm going to push back on this NXT Takeover 31 being thrown together. So I think it's a possible talking point, but I think that a lot of times in wrestling, and maybe because wrestling is grandiose and then they talk up stuff, is I think that's not true. Because I will say this for the Gargano versus Priest match, that was, I would say, thrown together but like with a week's notice or maybe a 2 weeks notice. But if you go back to LeRae and Io, that's been building up for like what, a year, since when Io turned on Candace. You can talk about we can talk about Finn and we can talk about Kyle. I mean, Kyle got put into a he won a match to get a title shot. And with Escobar versus Swerve, that's been going on for months since the tournament. So I won't say it's thrown together. Thrown together to me would be like, we're just talking about Nitro during the Monday Night War where, you walk. If I'm a wrestler, I walk in at 5:00, the show starts at 6:00, and this whole match is be set up. That to me will be thrown together. Where this NXT, at least if you can trace back the majority of the matches, at least have some kind of build, at least have some kind of, not build to them, but maybe some kind of stakes to them. So what would you two like to address with that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. That saying it's thrown together is probably an extreme way for us to have been stating it. And you're 100% right about Swerve and Escobar. Everything else, I mean, they've got the serendipity of LeRae and Shirai having the history. But this is pretty much a takeover on a 2 week build, and they've done a fantastic job of building Balor versus O'Reilly on a 2 week build and making that seem significant for both guys, particularly O'Reilly. But then you look at something like Gargano and Priest, and to be fair, it seems as though that was something that came out of this outbreak, that they may have had different plans for the North American title. Not that I particularly remember what they may have been building to with it, but Gargano just came out of nowhere. They announced it on social media, and then he does this attack after Priest's match with, I think it was Austin Theory. So I think I'll tie it into my thoughts about Halloween Havoc, that now that they're doing these branded shows to pop a rating on TV, and they seemed to have known that they had plans to do a Halloween-themed event. I'm just not sure why you don't continue. I mean, you can climax some things at natural times, like maybe Swerve Escobar, as nice as it is to see that those guys got the takeover spot. You could climax that. You could climax Kushida Dream, or just say that it's already climaxed. And not put it on the show, and continue to build these up to the Halloween Havoc show, because I would argue that tonight's show basically felt like a branded TV show, like a Great American Bash or what was the other one they gave us recently? I don't even remember. I think I'm sticking by that to a point. But yeah, it's probably extreme to say it was thrown together, especially with the Nitro comparison that you make. But what was the other Halloween Havoc thing I was going to say? I don't know. Whatever. I hope that this is good for Shotzi, because maybe she can do like a Sven Gulli thing and sort of host the show without really getting involved, and they can cut to her in entertaining ways that will get her over. Although now that I say that out loud, I realize that that's relying on Shotzi's acting ability, which hasn't been her best trait. But
welcome,
yeah,
Nate, to the ball pit.
Yeah. Maybe her ball pit, her actual ball pit that she's building in her house, will be ready by then, and they can film it from there. All right. So Nate, what do you think about Brian pushing back a little bit on our criticism of the booking of this takeover? That's the other thing I was going to mention without going into it too much, because it's more of a question mark. I don't even know why they decided to do this on such short notice. I don't know if there was some decree that there's not enough network content that's holding subscribers. And it's something that Wade had queried, was maybe NXT feels the need to be building to something major. But again, if the Halloween Havoc was coming right down the road, they could be building to that. So anyway, Nate, go ahead.
Yeah. So that's kind of it. It's like, you know, one of the things that I really liked about NXT, and one of the things that really drew me to NXT, was the five shows a year, you know, it was five takeovers a year. You know, because it gave you all this time to build up the stories, and you could tell stories, and I apologize, my dog's squeaking his toy in the background, but you could still tell stories, that were kind of, they might not have been nearly as big stories, you know, for takeover. You save the big stuff for takeover, but you could still tell stories and stuff on TV. And it kind of, the way that they would book the shows at that time was, it was really conducive to the takeovers, because, you know, you'd be building up, and it was kind of like it was just a beautifully crafted web, if you will, that would build up to these events. And now with kind of just the rapid fire mentality of these takeovers, it's starting to almost feel a little bit more main rostery, because you're building towards a new show every month. A lot of moving parts, a lot of things change. Yes, I do think it was probably a little extreme, on the extreme side to say they were, everything was kind of thrown together. Because you're right, a lot of the matchups and the feuds and stories weren't necessarily thrown together. They were, they were being told over a particular length of time. Io and Candice was, probably the longest, but, obviously Swerve and Escobar too. But still, were those stories building to this particular event? I don't think this event was announced, ahead of time, really, before they started talking about it just a few weeks ago. Because usually they announce, takeovers in advance. I don't think this is one of them that was announced beforehand. It was kind of just all of a sudden thrown out there. And yeah, so it's like they could have still built these feuds for another couple weeks to get to Halloween Havoc. If they knew that was coming down the line, it feels thrown together as far as the show, but in terms of the stories and things, I agree with that. The stories are still being told over a certain length of time and all of that. It's just you know, and we know that because of the whole COVID outbreak, you know, there was a lot of things that had to kind of shift, a lot of gears had to change, and, you know, things that were already set in motion had to kind of, you know, shift gears. So I wonder if this was, you know, if this show was actually scheduled, were all of these stories supposed to culminate here, or were they supposed to culminate, you know, later? You know, obviously we're probably never going to know. It's all speculation, but if we just had a takeover, here we are again. We're going to have, you know, another takeover like show in another month, so not even. So I don't know. It all just feels very rapid fire to me.
We've definitely had some audibles called, and the recent show that this reminds me of the most is Worlds Collide, which surprisingly ended up being a really fun show, if I remember correctly. But going into it, it was just like, man, they really just wanted to put together a novel event, I guess. So anyway, anything else for us, Brian?
I'm gonna backtrack a little bit. So thanks to Wikipedia, Wikipedia, easy for me to say. So we had War Games in November of 2019. That was 27. Portland, remember, I was in Portland. That was back in February. In Your House was in June. Triple X was in August, and then we had 31 in October. So there's some space between these takeovers. The next one, 32. By the way, they don't have, at least in Wikipedia, they don't have Halloween Havoc as being a takeover. The next takeover they have, again, according to Wikipedia, is December the 6th. And then they mention the next takeover is the 33, which is March the 27th. And of course, they can insert a takeover anytime they want to. So I'll just
Tampa Bay was sort of a takeover that got spread out across TV. The build to it was intending for it to be a takeover anyway. I guess I shouldn't throw Blackpool in there because that's a different brand. But since they use the takeover branding, I think of it. But yeah, that's not fair to throw that in there. And I would say that something like Great American Bash counts. I mean, I forget what that other one was that they did recently that had branding to it.
In Your House.
Not the In Your House one. It was a weekly one. Maybe it was.
They did Great American Bash 2 weeks in a row.
It was Super Tuesday. So that's not. Just a name to remind people that. Okay, so never mind. But Great American Bash, and assuming that they build to Halloween Havoc as like a special event where titles get defended. I mean, obviously it's not like a takeover, but it does feel like deliberately building to climaxes in major focal storylines much more frequently now rather than letting them simmer longer.
I will say, Tom, that you and Nate are hearkening back to the 1 hour network only NXT versus 2 hours going up against whatever the name of the company is to have the show on Wednesday. So the stakes are a lot higher than they were than when we were younger watching NXT Arrival.
Yep, the good old days. The good old days of what was that, like 6 years ago?
Yeah, right.
Yep.
No, and I mean that is a that's a good point. It's the only thing I have to that too is like it's and obviously with the addition of that extra hour, you've got a lot more content that you're producing over the course of the year. So yeah, I can understand wanting to have more takeovers or prominent shows, but when you add those shows, you know, you are starting to sacrifice, in a way, you're starting to sacrifice quality depending on, you know, the size of your writing staff and things like that. You know, I know, like Bruce Pritchard has talked about on his podcast before, you know, the times where they went from they're just a big five and then they added in the In Your House, or actually it might have even been big four back then, I don't remember, but then they added in the In Your House pay-per-views, and so then they had to start, you know, changing the story arcs to account for these other pay-per-views that they got to start building up for. And you know, so it changed the way that they were writing TV. So it's like, I understand it. I totally get it. But I just kind of like, and so far I feel like they've done a good job. They haven't gone the way of like 2000 WCW on me or anything. you know, that's just something that I'm kind of like a little worried about, because, you know, it's just a lot of content rapid fire, and I'm hoping it doesn't sacrifice what we're used to in the NXT product.
Yeah, and Brian, for what it's worth, I really appreciate where you're coming from, because I've pushed back
on
the same kind of mentality going back a year when people were really knee-jerking and going like, oh man, they're just giving us too much too fast, and they're giving away too much. And for a long time, I was really like, no, I think they're still pacing it out at a pretty fair rate. I'm impressed with how they're doing this. And just recently, I've started to, starting with Great American Bash was when I was really starting to be like, oh boy, the rate has picked up to an unsustainable level, I fear.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tom and Nate, as always, thanks a lot. I appreciate all the things that you do. And I know you mentioned already, but of course, PWT talks. Actually, let's go back. We're talking about 8 years back is when I wanted to actually hype. I know you already mentioned it, Tom, but as you know, I'm an admirer of that show as well. So thanks a lot for both the things that you do, for all the things that you do, Nate and Tom. And hi, Kelly, by the way, too.
Hey, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks, hi, Kelly.
Have a real good night. Thanks a lot.
Cool, man. Yeah, glad you were able to catch us, Brian. And yes, thank you for the plug. NXT 8 years back. If you go VIP, drops every Saturday. Kelly and I are having a blast covering that one, and Brian emails us on just about every single show with his own points, which are always fun to throw in there. Lots of stuff about Briley Pierce's wardrobe. Briley Pierce sort of making pseudo headlines nowadays by throwing a lot of Twitter shade Joey Ryan's way. So thumbs up, Briley. And that, I believe, is where we are going to leave it tonight. I think that covers it. Nate, who are you, and whatever other stuff you got?
All right, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. Like I said, I write the NXT hits and misses, which I did write one for tonight, and that should be coming up on the website in the next day or so. And if you are a fan of role-playing games or therapy or just, you know, fun in general, I've got another I've got a podcast and a YouTube channel. Look for me at DegeTime, DegeTime. We play role-playing games, and we talk about how you guys can use them to de-stress and unwind and all that good fun stuff. So check it out if you'd like to. Please do.
And I am at Tom Staup on Twitter. I'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Thanks so much to tonight's callers. You guys were awesome. And
yes.
This one is just for Doc Bruce. Kyle O'Reilly's rolling butterfly suplexes are indeed brilliantly beautiful. Doc Bruce, that one's for you. Good night, everybody.